RDI Insights, Mike Dempsey in conversation with Royal Designers.
In 1964, as a budding, enthusiastic designer, Perry King set off to Italy for some work experience at the Milan studio of Ettore Sottsass. He never came back. The life and culture suited him, and for the past 38 of those 50 years, he's been there, along with Santiago Miranda, as one half of the highly successful design partnership of King Miranda. They embrace an astonishing range of work, from furniture to graphics and exhibition design to lighting and much, much more. I spoke to Perry King about his life and work in the beautiful setting of Dartmouth Hall in Devon, where he was taking part in the 2013 RDI Summer School. Now, you were born in 1938, during World War II.
Just before, because it was June.
Just out of trivial interest, your birth year was the same as Terence Stamp, John Prescott and David Dimbleby. Now, I know that you were born in Lambeth, and your parents were both very artistic.
They were sculptors.
And they were at the Royal College.
They met at the Royal College.
So your childhood, unlike many other designers that I've spoken to, must have been a very creative one. It must have surrounded you, I guess. You were very aware of what creativity was.
I don't think so, because being born in 38, in the beginning, in 39, my father was already in the Navy. And after a while, I was evacuated. Yes, wasn't evacuated, but we went to live. My mother and I went to live with other uncles and aunts in Lancashire. And we stayed there. First of all, I think they went to Scotland and then down to Lancashire, near Morecambe. And these were the formative years when I became conscious of what was going on and saw. So I was in near Lancaster, a little village called Caton. And this is where I first grew up. And there wasn't really very much creativity.
So your parents remained in...
No, my father went off in the Navy.
War. And your mother was with you?
And my mother, I was with my mother, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't see my father really until 45.
But your mother presumably continued with her creative pursuits, or was it difficult?
I think it was difficult.
Right.
She was sharing a house with her sister-in-law, and she didn't, in fact, do very much. Poor lady devoted herself to looking after me.
And did you have any brothers or sisters?
I had two sisters who were born after the war when my father came home.
So you were very much the only child.
I was very much the spoilt only child. And I found it very difficult, in fact, when my father came home. Who was this austere man who took away my mother's affection from me?
Oh, dear. And did you then go back to London when he returned?
No, when he returned, we went to Hanley, where he got a job, Stoke-on-Trent, and where he was teaching ceramics at the art school. And there I became very conscious, if you like, of the creative atmosphere. I was horrified that our sitting room was a dirty studio with paintings and chippings and bits all over the place, while other people's were very beautiful and organized with easy chairs and the radio set in the corner.
Oh.
And ours was completely different. It was chaotic. Paint, canvases, easels, benches. I hated it.
So you were rather embarrassed
when
your friends back.
I was embarrassed by this, yes. Yeah. And it took several years before I began to appreciate it, if you know what I mean. It was different, and I think I didn't want to be different then.
Now, you were sent off to boarding school.
Mm.
At what age?
11.
So at 11, you went to Ackworth, to a boarding school in Ackworth in Pontefract,
near
West
Pontefract,
Yorkshire,
yes.
Which was a Quaker school.
It's a Quaker
A very
school.
Old, established one, 1779 yes. or something like yeah. that. What was that experience? Were you a full boarder?
Yes, I was a full boarder.
And how did you adapt to that?
Well, initially, like all boarders, I was unhappy about being separated. But my relationship with my father wasn't really very good. I think that resolved that problem. and I enjoyed it very much after the first year. It had lots of good things. Being a Quaker school, they were very serious, concerned with our moral and physical welfare, but above all our moral welfare. A very good school. I'm very grateful for what they taught me. But it had, it separated me from real life, and I think boarding schools, did you go to boarding school?
No, I didn't.
It separates you from real life. You live in a sort of cocoon, and you don't have to take decisions that other kids out in the real world have to take. And so at the end of the school, I was not really prepared for the next stage of my life.
So this would have taken you up to the age of...
Yes, 17, 18.
17, which is quite a long period of your time. Mm. So at the Quaker school, at Ackworth School, did any sort of creativity start to develop in you? Was it a school where that was encouraged?
Yes. There was a good woodworking studio and an excellent metalworking workshop run by a chap called Story, of whom I became very fond. He was a very good teacher, had a strong influence on me, and taught me things about the artistic endeavour that I hadn't really bothered to learn at home, or I had refused to learn, but from him I could accept.
So rather than from your parents,
yes,
you needed someone else to,
inspire.
Yes. So you left presumably in the mid-50s, I guess, would
yes.
it have been? And
yes.
you went to Birmingham College of Art, where your father was
the vice principal.
So that was a strange thing. How did that happen? Were you...
Well, it wasn't really strange. I was so simple and so unprepared for future life that I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Right.
And even though I got good exam results, none of them were brilliant. But I had just begun to discover that if you worked hard, you could achieve results, even if you weren't all that good. I remember my violin teacher. My father was paying for lessons. Private lessons. And after the first year, my report said, tries hard but lacks talent. And that was the only thing where I tried hard. Everything else said, could do better if he tried. So I realised I had no musical talent, but I did like making things and doing things with my hands. But I had no idea of what my future could have been or was going to be, or where I wanted to go for further education. I was hopelessly immature, and I think this is the really one good thing that I have to give my father credit for. He said, you like making things and deciding what they're going to be like. Why don't you come and see if the Industrial Design School in Birmingham suits you? And I said, well, I haven't taken the exam and things. I don't even know if there was an exam, but anyway, he said, don't bother about that. Being the vice principal, he organised for me to enter the school. I'm very grateful to him.
And at the school, it was Nam Slutsky.
No, Nam Slutsky wasn't there for my first year.
He wasn't there.
He was there in the
later.
Last year.
Yes. Okay, yeah. Because your time there was interrupted by...
National service,
that everyone then, of course, had to serve their 2 years. Mm. So, and you went back later, but how did you find national service? Was that just like going back to boarding school, or did it have a profound effect, or didn't it affect you at all?
No, it wasn't like going back to boarding school. Boarding school had prepared me for lots of things happened to you, like leaving home, discipline, communal bedrooms, all this I knew how to handle. But it matured me immensely. Not much physically, I was always the weakling there, but the school preparation enabled me to face the problems of national service without difficulty.
So what did you do? What were you doing in national service? Just an ordinary private, or did you...
No, I got a commission. I became a second lieutenant. I actually became an acting captain in a very interesting unit that they put me in, which was the materials handling unit. So we were checking out vehicles and cranes and equipment that the army might wish to buy. So we'd check it out and see if it was suitable. It was very interesting.
And you then went back to college, and that's when Naum...
That's when I met Naum Slutsky.
And he was known for silverware and other sort of products. How was the experience of working or training under someone like that? Was that very inspirational? Or?
It could have been much more inspirational had I not been such a crass youth. I don't think I fully appreciated
the opportunity
that I had and who he was. Certainly not who he was, because recently we did some work in a museum in the UK, and I came to speak to friends at the V&A, and they took me to see his stuff in the V&A, and I was very impressed with it. But of course, he was my teacher, and I don't think I fully appreciated it at all. In fact, one day he came to dinner at my father's house. Now I think, if I now had the possibility to have dinner with somebody who taught at the Bauhaus, what a lot I would ask and talk about. But I didn't.
Well, that's sadly the kind of ignorance of youth.
It's
really,
the ignorance
you know,
of youth,
and you,
yeah.
if only
yeah.
sort of thing.
Yeah.
You obviously eventually left and then went out into the big world. You didn't go on to another college after Birmingham?
No, in fact, I did my national service because I failed to get into the RCA.
You went on to work at Wilkes and Ashmore.
Wilkes and Ashmore.
Who designed railway locomotives.
They did a lot on railway carriages.
Yes, I looked them up and they...
They did.
I mean,
a
they
lot
no longer
of
exist, but they're very much in the history of locomotives.
Yes, they were an excellent design student.
And what were you doing there? You were just
I was an assistant to Mr. Wilkes.
Whatever.
You know. Well, he gave us projects and guided us through, and we did the drawings. And they had a very good model shop. And
how long did you work there for?
3 years.
3 years. So that took you up to the early 60s.
Yes, well...
About 64 or something like that.
Yes, 63, 64.
And then you got this this job with Ettore...
Ettore Zotzas.
In Italy.
Well...
Who is working for Olivetti, or Olivetti was certainly... Either he was working fully for them, or Olivetti was one of his major clients.
But I when I was studying with Slutsky, there was a magazine that came to the college library called Stile Industria, and it was an Italian design magazine. And I looked through the pictures and I saw something that for me was absolutely extraordinary, and it was a computer he designed, the Elea computer. And what I saw was completely, totally different from the stuff that Slutsky was teaching. Slutsky was materials, manufacturing, less is more, truth to the machine, all these phrases that belong to that distant past. And his was completely different. He designed this computer. Of course, there were valves and wires in those days. But he'd made it into a room. He was an architect, and he'd built in this room a city, beautiful cabinets. The doors were 6 millimeter aluminium panels, because it had a good functional reason. It dissipated the heat. Aluminium is a very good conductor. And so this was a completely different approach. And I resolved while I was at college, even before I got my first job, that I'd go and work for him. That was my ambition, you see.
And how difficult or easy was that?
Well, it took 3 years.
So how did you started a correspondence with him? Or?
I started a correspondence, and then I actually got a job in Italy with a British design studio that opened there for 6 months. And I went out there, worked for 6 months, always closer to Zotzas. Then the studio closed, and I was left with nothing, but I still determined that I wanted to get into his studio. And so I worked for other designers. I was very good at airbrushing. I could do renderings with the airbrush. And I can remember one occasion where they said, chap came and he said, "Oh, I've got to do a proposal for 12 televisions for next Tuesday." I said, "Right, we get cracking, you know." So I cracked out 12 airbrushed elevations of a television screen, psst, with the airbrush, you know, and the wood grain, you do it with a sable brush and burnt sienna, and you squeeze it out and you drag it across to get the wood grain, you see. Yeah. He was absolutely amazed. He was a German guy who studied in Germany. He was amazed that I knew how to do these renderings, you see.
And where had you learned to do that?
Well, I'd watched in Wilson Ashmore. Ashmore wasn't there when I went. He'd already left. But there was a legacy there. They were car designers, and they really knew how to render. And I'd seen others there doing the airbrush, so I did a bit, you see.
Because at that time, you know, I know from my early days that every studio had retouchers who could do beautiful airbrush retouching, scraper board artists, and so on. Illustration, technical illustration, and so forth, was the norm.
Yes.
In addition, while you were, you know, working on the Olivetti work, obviously the Valentine portable typewriter was being created, which was, you know, I remember it was a sort of revolutionarily beautiful. Bright red, fantastic.
It was a fantastic.
It was an object that you wanted to have rather than just a functional machine. It was sort of the form.
But I think
desirable.
I mean, I worked on that. I was his assistant on that, so I contributed something to it. But it was his project, and he had this vision of young people communicating with little messages. And his idea was that this would only type uppercase characters because you didn't need upper and lowercase, and it wouldn't be so immediate. But in fact, Olivetti insisted having upper and lowercase because the mechanism already existed, and to change it would have been hideously expensive.
Oh, I see.
But it was an idea. It was like texting.
Yes.
That was what he wanted. Of course, you would have had to send it by post.
Of course.
But and we made it so that...
It had a slip case, and a sort of rather nice...
It had a nice case.
Yeah.
And you could turn it up and down and sit
on
it. Yes. So you could type on your knees, if you like.
And he was also designing the Systema 45.
Yes. Furniture system.
Oh, it's a furniture system.
Yes, yes.
Because I'd looked that up and it turned out to be a gun, and I thought, no, surely not.
Absolutely not. But he was, it was very formative for me because he knew the Beat poets from his wife, who translated them into Italian. And I remember going to parties with people like Allen Ginsberg, which, you know, for us, it was just we're talking about 64, 65. So it was very dramatic to meet the real people from the Beat generation.
By that time, were you speaking Italian fluently? Yes. Did it take you very long?
It took me 2 or 3 years to become fluent. And I've never lost my English accent. It's not very strong, but I've never lost it. And when I hear myself in a recording speaking Italian, I find it very embarrassing. But I can't hear it.
No.
When I speak Italian, I'm speaking Italian just as the Italians do. But when I hear it on the tape recorder...
I'm sure it's incredibly charming for the Italians.
Well, I hope so. Thank you. That's very kind.
I'm sure it is. And now, the other thing that really interested me about your career is that, you know, quite a large part of your work was involving the Olivetti corporate image and the designing of fonts and posters and books. And you collaborated with your then future partner, Santiago Miranda. So you were really doing graphics.
Well, I was affected by the Beat people we met, perhaps. But after working for Zotzas for quite a 5 years maybe, in 69, 70, my wife and I said we were going to stop what we were doing and travel. We weren't sure whether I really wasn't sure whether I wanted to do design as I was doing it. And I wasn't sure what direction I wanted my life to go. I felt that circumstances outside my control were dictating what I was going to do and what I was doing. And I wanted to test that and see whether it was really what I wanted to do. So we bought a second-hand 500.
Oh, this is when you had your sabbatical,
yes.
your lost year.
Yes.
Now, it's very interesting because another royal designer called Terence Woodgate, who I'm sure you know, did a very similar thing.
Yes.
He went off to India in a Land Rover, but you decided to go off to India in a Fiat 500, which sounded extraordinary.
Well, not really, because I think you either do it in a vehicle that's going to do it, which I couldn't afford, or you do it in a vehicle that, if it can't do it, doesn't matter much.
Now, you went to Madras and Bombay with your wife. Was she your wife at that time?
Yes, we just got married.
Just got married.
Yeah.
So this was a kind of a extended sort of honeymoon? Or
No. We were already certainly decided on our course of action.
Right.
Ours was a journey of exploration also.
For you, as a sort of a catalyst for you to make a decision about, really, did you want to do? And so presumably that year did just that. It made you, it sort of helped you decide.
Yes, we didn't know it was going to be a year. We hadn't got a time limit. And, of course, it was an extraordinary time because we could drive from Italy through Yugoslavia, Greece, Bulgaria, Turkey, Iran, Afghanistan. You could drive there, and we did. And the thought of what's happening in those countries now is terrifying.
Yes,
because it wasn't like that, and we were happy and free and welcomed in these countries. There were lots of people doing it, but I didn't see them. We felt we were on our own doing this.
Mm.
When we got to Afghanistan in Kabul, certainly we met other people travelling and other people coming home. In fact, I could tell you quite a lot of funny stories about what we saw there. India, of course, is immense. And we went to Nepal and we travelled around. And then we shipped our little 500 back to Italy. Because really couldn't go any more because we had some new wheels shipped out. But the tyres had worn out and the wheels were stuffed with leaves, which amazed the Italian tyre people when we bought new tyres when we got it back to Italy.
Did you burn your bridges by going off to India? Did you have a job to go back to?
I thought that perhaps I would have, because my relationship with Zotsas was very good, I thought. But in fact, he was pissed off that I'd gone. And when I came back, he wouldn't see me. So I went to the director of design at Olivetti, who was a chap called Zorzi, and said, you know, I like working at Olivetti. Is there nothing else I can do? He said, yes. We need a design coordinator for corporate image. So I went and started work on corporate image, which was a completely new start.
Mm.
And something that I'm very grateful for, because one of the things I'd learnt in Italy, that the divisions between furniture design, industrial design...
They don't exist, do they? Design,
they don't exist.
No, and in fact, many start as architects.
Yes.
That seems to be the norm in Italy.
It certainly was then, because there was no design school, so everybody was an architect.
Yes, I've always found that extraordinary. This sort of kind of, you know, which I think is probably fantastic, you know, the idea of, you know, drifting into new areas, but there's no division, you know, whereas these days there is. And corporate design, of course, at that time, you know, the only other company really doing it seriously would have been IBM in America under Paul Rand.
Yes.
So that would have been a sort of...
They were parallel.
They would be vying for...
Olivetti was an extraordinary company with an extraordinary social conscience. They were almost like Quakers in their dedication to social welfare, the welfare of their workers. It was a wonderful company. It's very sad that it's disappeared. Yes. Did you see that film, Alphaville?
I didn't, no.
Well, Alphaville is a very interesting, with Lemmy Caution. Alphaville, in the scenes of Alphaville, there are three computer manufacturers, IBM, Mitsubishi, and Olivetti. And, of course, Mitsubishi do other things, and Olivetti have collapsed. But it was interesting that at that time, the three potential computer manufacturers in a future, 20, 30 years in ahead, were one Italian, one Japanese, and one American.
Oh, that's amazing. So Santiago Miranda, still at Olivetti then, at that point?
No, he joined Olivetti when I came,
when I came back
from my trip. I remember we went to I was invited to a party, and I saw this guy with all this hair, shoulder-length hair, and a beautiful girlfriend. So beautiful that I went over and talked to him. And that was Santiago. And we started talking about food and cookery. And we found immediate relationship talking about food and cookery. And that,
he's a Spanish. He's from Seville.
He's from Seville. Yeah, yeah. And that started the friendship that...
So you were both sort of outsiders.
We were both, in a way, outsiders, yes. Although we've never felt outsiders.
No. And so in 1975, you set up your company partnership of King Miranda Design, which is continuing to this day. The thing that I'm curious about, having run a company myself and starting off with a partner who... we connected, you know, as you do in life, you meet people and there's a special connection. But in my case, the sad side was that I eventually lost my friend through all sorts of complicated... So I'm always very suspicious about, you know, good friends starting a business rather than two business partners starting a business, but friends. But you're still very much working... together.
We're still working
and
together.
Has it been a sort of smooth passage? I mean, with two creatives, and he's a little younger than you, isn't he?
He's a little younger, which is makes an enormous difference, because when we were starting the career, I was naturally able to assume in talking to clients, I had more gravitas and authority than he.
Okay.
And now exactly the opposite is true, because he's young and vigorous and I'm an old fart, so he's able to...
So what were those early days at King Miranda like? Did you start with just the two of you, or did you...
Well, we started in my daughter's bedroom.
Okay.
So we talked very quietly while trying to, so that she could sleep in the afternoons, and we'd be there drawing. And we did a project called Unlimited Horizon, which was an exploration of objects and spaces between the public and the private. And we did some drawings, and we took these to two or three prospective clients to say that we were exploring this, we thought it could be interesting to them. And one was
speculative work.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't that we weren't proposing anything.
No.
We were showing them what we were doing and thinking. And that produced work with Floss and with Marca Tre, which was the office furniture manufacturer. And those were good, prestigious, important clients, because we'd sold ourselves that we wouldn't do work that we weren't proud of. So... we were quite hungry at the beginning, but that.
So you'd created sort of philosophy of a work sort of ethic that that you wanted to adhere to.
Yes, and now I had still a consultancy with Olivetti.
And that's useful.
It wasn't full time, so I was able to work. You know, and Santiago tightened his belt. We split the money to whoever needed it.
So when projects came in, what was the relationship like? Did you work on the projects together
Yes. We've always worked.
You've always worked. So the crediting of the two of you is absolutely true.
It's always,
true.
Always, yes. Yes.
And is that an easy... Do you found that collaborative...
It's not easy at all.
No.
It's not easy at all. And we sit at a table and sketch and talk. We always do this when nobody's listening, so nobody can knows whether it was my idea or Santiago's.
Okay.
And we never accuse each other of not having had the idea.
In my experience, most of the designers who I admire and have met have been very modest. I mean, you know, I'm always suspicious of the ones that are talking themselves up. There's usually some flaw. But nevertheless, within all of us as designers, there is a sort of, you get an idea and you want to pursue it.
Yes.
Now, that's where I'm sure tension must...
Tension built in.
My idea is better than your idea. Well, how do you resolve those?
We consciously resolve that by not thinking in that way. Was this idea better than that idea? And once you take away the phrase, this is my idea and that's yours, it's much easier. This idea is better than that. Even though that idea might be your idea. But as we've decided to do it together, then it becomes my idea too.
So it's equal possession. It's an idea
thrown
into the middle and it doesn't matter where it came from.
No, it didn't matter where it came from.
I see. And you still work like that today. I mean, as the company progressed over those 38 years, which is a long time.
38, is it? Wow.
Yeah. It is a long time. How did it expand? So you moved out of your...
We moved out of our daughter's bedroom.
Yourself, because of these various prestigious jobs, presumably your name was banded around and you started to get...
So we started a little office. Mm. And I also had started part-time teaching. And I found a very good student who now has his own publishing house. And asked him if he'd come and draw for us. And... he came, he was very happy to do that, and he was our assistant producing drawings while we were creating ideas. And I knew he was capable of following through an idea. He knew how to put the right drawer angle on a piece of plastic, so I didn't have to worry about the quality of the drawings, and he would solve these problems rather as I had done with Zotsas. Not as well as I had done with Zotsas. I don't want to be falsely modest. And he got, he helped us a lot. And then we got another assistant when more work came. Because it took a long time then to do things, because you did it on the drawing board.
Yes, of course, parallel motion was part of the studio.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, these days you don't need all that space anymore.
You don't need
You could
space.
Go back to your daughter's bedroom.
Yes, indeed.
You know, looking at your work, it spans architecture, exhibition design, lighting, furniture, and graphics too. So this, you know, this Italian way of working is very much embedded in your company. There's no, you know, you wouldn't say, well, actually Perry just designs furniture or lighting.
Well,
you've got this...
Yes, we try and say to our clients that it's a real European studio, that there's a British culture, a Spanish culture, but we work speaking Italian in an Italian method. So there's an Italian design method plus the two cultures, the Spanish and the English.
Mm.
And some of them are amused by this. Mm. So. But it's also true. You know, it is... A three-cultured studio.
Mm.
I mean, I have this drama and energy and drive and fire of the British, and he has the calm, relaxed, methodical Spanish attitude.
Yeah.
You
see. So did you ever, going to Italy as you did with a specific reason, did you ever dream that you'd stay there for a number of years.
Absolutely not. I only went for 2 years.
Yes, and stayed for...
And stayed, yes.
And did you ever get any desire to return, or did you fall in love with the whole... Or was it simply that you made a name for yourself there and, you know...
No, it was fun. I didn't decide at all. There was the excitement of living in a different culture, learning new things. I hadn't separated myself from the UK. It's not as if I'd gone to live in Australia, which is, you know, 36 hours of the aeroplane.
Yes.
It's in an hour I could have come home.
Yes.
But I was free to pursue things that otherwise I'd never...
And your wife is British, yes?
No, my wife is Italian.
Oh, she is Italian. Okay, yes, well, that's another reason,
that's
obviously,
another
to be, particularly
being,
with Italians.
Even though I think she married me because she wanted to come and live in Britain.
Again, with a lot of designers, the division between work and life is, you know, there's no division really because, you know, maybe notepad by the bed or whatever, it's a constant. And I wondered if that was the same with you, or whether you have any, you know, outside interests that are surprising or that, you know, don't sort of actually connect with the world of design and creativity.
No, I think that everything I do is linked to this. There are two things. One thing that you were talking about the UK. I did maintain links with the UK with linking to education. I thought this was very important.
And you still do, don't you?
Well, nobody wants me to know. I'm too old, you know. But I've been the external examiner in Glasgow and Manchester and Exeter. And then they asked me to do it at the Royal College. They even made me visiting professor at the Royal College.
So that's a rather nice accolade, considering
well,
you were...
Failed to get
down,
in. Turned down the main visiting professor. I was very chuffed with that.
Yes,
we were talking about outside.
Outside interests. What do you do?
Well, I've always liked making things, and
sort of.
It's almost the same. I mean, I spent the summer making a table, but I also one of the things that happened when we came back from India. Was that we were absolutely focused on our future life. I had no more doubts, and I wanted to be a designer, and I wanted to make things. I also wanted to try and grow a lot of my own food. So we bought a piece of land, a field, on a hillside looking down on Lake Como, and it had a couple of barns on it, and we put a new roof on one, and we used to go up there whenever we could, every weekend and holidays. And we've continued to do that. And now the original building is really a place where my children and their families go to. We've converted the other barn into a house where this is what I wanted the big table for, because now there are nine of us, and the table I had was too small.
Oh. I think, you know, I hope you don't mind me saying you're now 75, I think.
Yes.
75, and many would be considering retiring or winding down. Why do you carry on?
It's fun. I like it. I would hate to wind down. Mm. In fact, winding down is something I do not want to do.
Yeah.
It may happen that I lose my spring, and so in the end I do wind down, but I don't want to choose to do that. I'll fight that to the end.
Now in this 21st century, there's a built-in obsolescence with virtually everything. I'm amazed. I take a weekly trip to my local dump because I live in two places, and I'm never there on the day that the garbage and the research. And the stuff that I see in the various recycled areas is astonishing.
I mean, things
seem to be. And I just wondered if you had your time over again, would you still want to be a designer, do you think? Do you feel that we're producing too many things? Do we need yet another chair? Do we need yet, you know?
That's very difficult. On one hand, no, we don't need a new chair. And certainly I try and design things so that they last. I mean, I don't need a new washing machine, and I'm upset if, as it has, it's gone wrong. But the chap who came to repair it showed me this little piece that had gone wrong, so we put that in again, and it should last for another 8 years. But yes, you're quite right, I don't want to do that. But I don't think that's a designer's fault. Mm. I remember having a discussion with a group of students who were talking about the use of materials and whether we were using enough recycled materials. And they asked me, with a very accusative voice, whether that dehumidifier with a big plastic case I designed, why I didn't design it with reused plastic, recycled plastic. And I said, well, it is made with the recycled plastic. It's the cheapest cyclone. It's the cheapest plastic you can get. So this manufacturer is fighting to use recycled plastic. It's not, but he's not doing it for your and my good and the future of the planet. He's doing it because it's cheaper. Mm. And I've become a bit cynical about efforts to improve recycling and the use of resources that don't have an economic logic. We have to build in a business plan so that a hard-nosed business people will find it advantageous to do it. It's like the carbon tax that the economists would like to build in. Of course we should. You know? Of course we should. This is the only way that we'll get the business people to put it in their balance sheets and find it reasonable and logical to do it. Otherwise they won't.
A question that I always sort of ask at the end of an interview is that what advice would you give to a young budding designer who wants to pursue a career in design, and in particular the areas that you've embraced, which are quite a lot, in this sort of 21st century? What do you have any little gems that you...
No, I have no gems. What I can say is that one of the reasons I come to the summer school, and we're doing it at the summer school, is because I meet really bright kids who tell me where design is going. And in fact, I come here to learn. It's not that I'm giving pearls of wisdom. You know? But I could say to the guy, you have to work hard. It's hard work.
Yes. Well, Perry, I mean, long may you continue having fun and working very hard. Perry King, thank you very much.
Thank you.